We were talking just a few minutes ago about how last year in Dallas, we were blissfully enjoying our afternoon refreshments with no idea what was about to hit. And so I'd like to, as Pascal said, just briefly highlight the journey that people have been on over the last year. As you know, H1N1 vaccine implementation was characterized by federal guidance and structure with a lot of flexibility for implementation at the program level. There was a very tight time frame for planning and an overwhelming amount of information. And as Pascal said, no mechanism to really keep track of how this was occurring from state to state. So our purpose was to collect the situational awareness data in a collaborative manner, working with the Association for Immunization Managers and with state officials, and try to provide the real-time feedback that Pascal talked about. And now in this later stage, to utilize some of that information to help evaluate the implementation and put it into context and help us come up with some lessons learned based on experiences. To do that, we talked with state officials week by week with some follow-up calls, all 50 states and the four metropolitan areas that received vaccines through telephones and emails. And we feel like we sort of walked along this journey with many folks and had a chance to vicariously experience what happened. More than a few times in our discussions with states, we heard that people felt like they were planning without really knowing where they were going. And over the years, just as a little background, states had developed pandemic plans supported by emergency response funding. And at various points last year, late spring and summer, folks began to recognize that H1N1 was really playing out quite differently than the H5N1 type scenarios that were the basis of pandemic planning. But at the same time, it was clear that this wasn't exactly going to be the business as usual approach that's used for childhood immunization programs, which everyone is so familiar with. So most states eventually came to incorporate sort of elements of both perspectives. And in most places, emergency preparedness and immunization people, along with many others in state government, were coming together trying to wrestle with very tricky questions like how much should we rely on mass vaccination events, and what is the most effective way to reach high-risk populations, and even should we try to protect high-risk individuals or focus our efforts on preventing outbreaks. And so all of these questions were things from the very beginning that folks were struggling with and really represent this idea of are we talking about preparedness pandemic, are we talking about immunization operations, or a good combination of the two. As plans began to take shape, state officials and their local partners were ready to begin this journey of implementation, but gearing up was at times maybe best characterized by the phrase hurry up and wait. There was a great deal of waiting for pieces of information and documents to come out, including information on how vaccine would be distributed. We heard so many folks talk about waiting for that provider agreement and getting a good sense of exactly what would be contained in that. And very tangible things like billing guidance and all the logistics of how that would work. And of course, that kind of information drives decision making, which then facilitates the implementation. With the tight timeframe for H1N1, a lot of states felt like they had to move forward with planning based on their best guess. And in more than a few cases, the plans had to be reworked, which caused a fair amount of communication challenges as they tried to implement sort of a changing game plan with an increasingly broad network of providers and new settings. And at times, almost everyone felt like they were running in every direction at once. One of the most critical decisions that programs had to make was who should receive vaccine and in what order. You remember the ACIP recommendation called out those five initial target groups that you're so familiar with, and note that they were not designated in any particular order. And that also the smaller subset of the target groups was also spelled out if supply was inadequate. And so, of course, there was insufficient vaccine for all of the individuals, even in the smaller group, to receive vaccines at the outset. So state and local public health officials had to determine their own priorities. And as you would guess, their decisions were quite variable and reflected their own interpretation of the recommendations, partnerships with different provider groups, local disease patterns, and even their overall goals for the campaign. I'm not going to do a ton of examples with data, but I do want to show you just in this example, something as simple as the first week that LAIV was available, just showing the different choices that states made, all with this basically the same information, all knowing that they were going to get a very small amount of vaccine, that it would only be LAIV and therefore not able to reach all of the target populations. Most, but not all, chose to do healthcare workers. The ones that didn't had very good reasons that they didn't do them, had made that choice. Most, but not all, did young children and older children, and some even tried to reach caregivers. So one of the things that was very striking to us as we talked with folks week after week was this process of careful and thoughtful decision making, considering all the different information sources and different contexts, resulting in very different answers from place to place. We could make a whole long list of the similar types of decisions that played out week after week from state to state. There were scores of decisions related to bringing new providers on board, everything from how to get them registered, how to weave them into communication channels, some of which didn't exist yet, how to provide them with handholding, which I've nicely worded here as assistance, with every step for folks that just aren't used to doing a lot of vaccination. Allocation of vaccine to providers was a similar challenge, including everything from how to estimate the number of patients high-risk patients would be seen in a particular setting, to the best way to match up specific vaccine formulations with providers. Reporting and accountability was another area where a lot of time was spent by states making decisions and thinking things through, with quite a bit of tension there between making systems that were easy to use and recognizing the need for accurate data and accountability. As we talked with states week after week, it was clear that this journey of H1N1 vaccination was exhausting. And after several intense months, demand began to wane, other program responsibilities needed attention, and people began to wonder, are we there yet? And of course we're not. And the reason is because the destination has changed a little bit. States are now trying to figure out how to build on their H1N1 successes in a lot of different ways, taking those new providers that came on board. And for most places, there were 2 to 3 times as many H1N1 providers as there were providers in the VFC or state childhood immunization program. That's a lot of new folks that represent potential partners, but also there are some challenges to figure out what would be the mechanism with which to work with those providers in the future. Another area that involves these new destinations is the expanded use of immunization registries. Quite a number of states used H1N1 as an opportunity to sign on new providers, to implement new features, and to, in general, make people more familiar with the registry and understand its benefits in a situation like this. Challenge now going forward, how to take that and build on it in new ways. New communication tools were something that occurred almost everywhere, from webcasts to newsletters, even something as simple as having an email list of providers that can have allow for rapid communication. Seems small, but was huge in certain places. And so these new communication methods set people up going forward to be able to expand their partnerships and expand the way that they inform people and work with people. And finally, in many places, H1N1 offered an opportunity to get into for the first time or to go deeper into school-based vaccination, with the challenge now of how to build on that in the future. So looking back, even though during those sleep-deprived, overwhelming weeks where it was difficult to tell day from night and right from left, our overall impressions are that H1N1 vaccine implementation was characterized by thoughtful decision-making. Doesn't mean everybody arrived at the same thing, but I can tell you people were thoughtful and decisions were carefully considered. A lot of innovation and flexibility, new systems, changing systems, modified systems, and a lot of dedication by staff at the state and local level, and special mentions to the folks at the federal level who we heard from people over and over again, worked very hard to keep folks informed of what the decisions were and what was going on. As you sit through these next talks, I hope that you are able to hear the influences on how states made decisions for their programs, and that you're able to appreciate this thoughtful approach and the dedication, and understand that what works in one state might not work in another, and see the value that we've come to appreciate in this structure of federal guidance with state-to-state implementation, because there were a lot of strengths that came out from place to place, and I think you're going to hear three people demonstrate that in the next three talks quite well. I'd like to acknowledge the other members of our team at the University of Michigan, Ann Cowan, Brian McIlvain, and Gary Freed. We had a lot of help from the folks at AIM, Claire Hannon and Caitlin Wells, and a special word of appreciation to immunization program managers and the other folks at the states that we talked to that gave up so much of their time week after week so that we could collect this data. Thank you.